This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, June 29th, 2022, a very ugly turn in market sentiment yesterday, big sell-off. As you can see on slide one, we posted what you could call a evening star formation. For those not familiar with the candlestick formation, look it up or just look at the last 3 days. It's the big up day, small sort of turnaround day, and then a big down day. And we talked about technical levels in the last few podcasts on the S&P 500, and it turns out the NASDAQ 100 was respecting and showing more technical behavior itself than the S&P was, with that almost perfect touch of the 61.8% retracement around 12,245 there. That's right around where the sell-off began. And as well, just like in Q1, as I mentioned yesterday, where the sell-off started on the third day, or with 2 days remaining, that is, of the quarter. And we have the same setup here so far. For supports, if we're supposed to be finding support here, you could turn it around, say, where's the 61.8 of this rally? That is not much lower, around 11,500 or just above that. But it was an ugly session yesterday, Peter. Not completely broad-based, as we see in the theme baskets, but certainly the really speculative high beta stuff taking it on the chin yesterday. And we can talk about proximate causes as well.
Yeah, I mean, and we know the majority of retail investors are exposed in these, you know, e-commerce bubble stocks, next gen medicine, crypto-related assets, payments. We know there are in these stocks. I mean, I have a bad feeling. I mean, if volatility continues at these levels, it will begin to wear down on this part of the market eventually. It's a very difficult environment. I was talking about on the podcast yesterday. Maybe we could go to 4,000 S&P 500 unless we got something adverse. And we really got some adverse news yesterday. I mean, the consumer confidence figures for June in the U.S., both the current consumer confidence, but also the expectations, were just horrible against expectations. And so it's obviously not looking good. We got another regional Fed manufacturing. I think this time it was from Richmond. Basically, was an echo of what we have seen from other regional Fed surveys, and it's just suggesting that there is a significant slowdown in at least in the manufacturing side of it. And we had the PMIs as well, showing that it's not only manufacturing; the services sector is also slowing down. On the flip side, and that's the that is really the trade, is very binary. So when high beta stuff falls off the bed, falls out of bed, we have commodities, defense, travel, logistics, semiconductors, some of the things that are most constrained are flipping on the other side. And that's what you see here on slide two in our theme basket. So very, very interesting environment. And I don't feel like after a session like this today that I have a high conviction on where we go next, to be honest.
Yeah, I wonder if that defense outperforms. Of course, some of that is defensive behavior per se, but as well that NATO announcement that Turkey has lowered its or dropped its objections to Finland and Sweden joining may have helped out there. But to pick apart a couple of the data points you mentioned yesterday, that consumer confidence survey, so the expectations component of it surprised on the negative side by, or it dropped, sorry, it surprised on the negative side, but it was a drop of 7.3. And that was on top of a negative 3.8 revision. So in all, 11 points lower than what we thought we were in terms of expectations in May. And that expectations figure is the lowest since 2013 and falling fast. And of course, the mismatch there is quite considerable, as you mentioned, between the expectations and the present situation. And then on slide three, I have put up a chart of that interesting Richmond Fed you mentioned, dropping very sharply to the lowest. It is just one regional survey, but it dropped to the lowest basically, you know, that it's been outside of periods during the pandemic and then during the 2008 and 9 recession. This has not necessarily been a leading survey or anything, but just to show how negative it is. And you can see it compared with the Chicago PMI, which posted to me the most positive and most sort of out of sync with the other surveys, reading of 60.3 in May. That was the last regional one up tomorrow ahead of Friday ISM manufacturing, which is still at a pretty elevated 56.1. Expectations are that it's only going to drop to 54.5. I'm thinking with these ugly surveys, especially if the Chicago PMI lines up a bit more with these other regional generally downside surprises this month, we'll see an ISM scraping closer to that 50 level. And as we see on that same slide on the right, the US 10-year yield dropping finally after after it rose quite sharply. There was the weak 5-year auction, the 7-year auction. There was nothing right home about there. It was okay, in line with basically the range stretching back some time, and we saw yields rolling over. So the U.S. Treasury market, interestingly, serving as a safe haven. This has been a very fickle market. It has not served as a safe haven in general. And in fact, of course, it's the rise in yields that has to some degree spooked this market. But that becomes a bigger story, especially I think in the FX space, if we drive down through 3% on that 10-year benchmark, especially for the Japanese yen. And I'll briefly take you through FX while Ola patiently waits for his look at the commodities market. So yen cross is rolling over in line with that rollover in yields. Very interesting to see if that follows through here, but not really generating the headlines just yet. A bit more interesting, of course, the general dollar strength yesterday, safe haven strength, again, despite U.S. yields coming back in as the market slightly lowers Fed expectations, brings forward that recession fears, et cetera. But then the Euro-Swiss and the Swiss franc continues to be a story with that Euro-Swiss level of parity coming into view. It only traded briefly over in the sort of the few days after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We're back below there. The weekly sight deposits that show whether the Swiss National Bank is intervening or not actually fell, suggesting they're not intervening at all and are maybe happy to see it down here. So that's very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see the behavior of that pair if and when we cross below the parity level. And then Eurodollar itself, that 106 really served as resistance in Eurodollar back at around the 105. Very pivotal area within the range here last couple of weeks since the FOMC meeting, but really needs to get below 104 to become a story to the downside. All right, well, we had a crude oil that's just been really bid. It finally rolled over a little bit, I suppose, on demand fears, recession fears, et cetera. But what's your latest take there and anything else you're seeing in commodities?
Well, that's simply we've got a bit of a tug of war here in the oil market because, we get all these continued weakness in data, as you've just been highlighting here. Growth in the second quarter, according to the Atlanta GDP, now forecast hovering just above zero. So that's obviously worrying the market. We also have a survey among U.S. Motorists basically saying that the percentage of people planning a holiday by car this over the next 6 months is at the lowest level in 4 years. So potentially we are seeing a response from motorists to these very high or record high gasoline prices we're currently seeing. But generally we are a little bit down on the day, but not by much. But I think the underlying support just remains the strongest factor right now. We got the OPEC Plus meeting tomorrow. Again, rubber stamping another increase, which we know will be elusive. I put in a chart from Bloomberg, which is taken from yesterday's joint technical committee meeting under the OPEC Plus umbrella. And they basically said that the production last month trailed quotas by a total of by around 2.7 million barrels a day. And since the group started increasing production last May, they have a deficit of around 562 million barrels less produced compared to what they had originally envisaged. So into this, we have the SBR, Strategic Reserves in the U.S., continue to be released almost a million barrels a day. That will run until the end of October. What happens after then? After that time, when we hopefully have some activity coming back into the Chinese economy, that obviously remains to be seen. But we just remains very cautious about any major correction at this point.
Yeah, and then on the following slide, you're taking a look at the oil majors. And I think it's a really interesting story because that big haircut there has nothing to do with the oil price and it has everything to do with the risk of political interference, fears that the U.S., the Biden administration in the U.S. is going to cap these fuel prices and sort of limit refinery margins because, as you've so well indicated before, the products that people are actually consuming are trading at levels as if oil was another maybe $50 or more higher here.
Exactly, John. And I think in addition to that, what you mentioned there, well, I think also just simply the fact that the energy space was one of the few remaining sectors where investors basically had a profit. So as the correction started, or as stock market weakened during the past months, probably the temptation to take some profit probably also was part of the driver. But it seems like we have run out of steam. The oil majors, the six I'm highlighting here, they have seen a 14% drop top to bottom, and we're now picking up again. If you look at some a bit of a slightly more wider index, the XLE, which is the Energy Sector ETF, which holds large cap U.S. energy stocks. You can see on the chart that it's obviously been quite a significant, much deeper correction. And that was, as you said, John, part of the story was the risk about taxes being applied to on profits. But seems like we found a decent plateau down towards that 70 level, and we are bouncing right now. So the energy sector, just the outlook for the sector that will continue to generate a lot of cash, a lot of revenues. If the money doesn't go towards investments, it will either end up in terms of share buybacks or end up in investors' pockets as a dividend. So that's probably underpinning the market for now.
All right. And then you have some further thoughts on the grain sector here, as we're all watching whether this grain can get out of Ukraine. It's quite amazing, really, that we're trading essentially at levels, well, not quite. Basically, there was an initial little rally burst at the end of February, of course, as Russia invaded Ukraine. But we're all the way back down to the sort of the levels that we're trading just after that little burst there.
Exactly. We've re-entered the low point. We entered found some support at the low end of that recent consolidation range that we saw back in March. Still a bit higher than from before the invasion, but at least it looks like the signals right now that we're getting is that these lower prices has attracted fresh demand, and that just basically means that the demand was not. Just basically disappeared at the high prices, and because some of the buyers were bulking at paying these extremely high prices. Now that we come down, buyers have returned, and that will obviously underpin the price. Also, we're looking ahead to tomorrow's acreage and stock report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I put in the expectations on slide 7 there, and as you can see, the quarterly stocks, these are basically Q2 22 versus Q2 21, and you can see the impact there on wheat stocks. They're down to, expected to be down 22%, and that's obviously part of the global story where inventories of wheat is relatively low, and we have to remember a lot of that inventory we have globally, they're actually stuck in silos in Ukraine, struggling to get out. They need to get out before the new harvest arrives, and that's really the point or the reason why we fear that the food crisis, although it has been reduced, it's not over yet.
Okay, and we're looking at some of the commodity prices a little bit sideways here, but Peter, you highlighted an email that was sent out by one of our colleagues, Kim Kramer-Larsen, yesterday, a very, very long-term survey from this Roosevelt Institute that measures, I'm not actually sure, I'm looking at the chart right now, it's not on our slide deck, but we'll possibly put it in tomorrow, what the actual axis is on the left there, but it's showing that, in any case, the general message is that companies are passing on higher cost to shoppers at the fastest pace since the 1950s. Pretty remarkable, and an important driver for inflation outside of whether the raw prices are going sideways or not.
Yeah, exactly. We have to look into this this chart a little bit more in this survey, because you're right. I mean, it's a chart crime not to describe on the y-axis what the hell is going on, but it's I think the message is quite clear. I think what it really shows, because you can see we'll put the chart out on our Twitter account. You can see actually the chart is going down during the most of the 70s. So I think the markup is additional markup beyond the cost that is just coming from inflation. So I think that is what's really going on. So if you have you have markups going up while you have inflation, then you're really having prices going up a lot. I think that's really what this is showing. But we'll post it and people can investigate it themselves. I think it's just another small piece for the entire puzzle here, that the inflation is it may be cooling down in some places, but it's still very much prevalent, and it could go higher.
Yeah, and then you have your stocks to watch page here, slide 8, looking at a big retail name in clothing, H&M, and a couple of other companies.
Yeah, I should have. There's so many I could have brought in today, because Pinterest, for instance, they just their CEO Ben Silberman, he was stepping down yesterday. They're getting a new guy called Bill Reddy from Google as the CEO. So of course there'll be a focus on Pinterest. You have Tesla, where Elon Musk is now have gone silent for 8 days on Twitter. This is absolutely unusual. Something is going on. I don't know what it is, but I mean, it's such a abrupt change in behavior that I don't know whether it's because they were in the final innings of the due diligence over Twitter or what it is, but they also laid off some autopilot employees yesterday. They're closing down some of their California facilities, and you know, the general sense is that there's a lot of pressure inside Tesla, and the stock price was also down, I think, 5% yesterday. So attention as well again today on Tesla. But then again, yes, mentioned H&M, they are out with better than expected Q2 pre-tax profit. They're also launching a 3 billion Swedish krona buyback program because, you know, the share price has just been sent into the basement, basically. And then they are also closing down more stores than where the market was. So again, streamlining the store network and the cost structure of H&M. So watch that today. Defense stocks, well, you can't ignore it. NATO had a big meeting yesterday in where they were negotiating with Turkey, and Turkey has now accepted the bid for Sweden and Finland's bid for joining NATO. And the key thing is here that there is now an agreement to exchange certain Kurdish people with connections to this what's it called, PKK party, if I remember correctly, in Turkey. That's a very awkward situation there, but it's part of the, I think as NATO said, Turkey had really valid points, and Sweden and Finland have joined in and accepted those terms, and now we can move forward. NATO's also said they want to expand the active personnel on the East Front from 40,000 to 300,000. Military spending is for sure going to go up massively because it will require a big ramp up in ammunition, etc. Over the coming years. And then NIO, so Grizzly Research is one of those dedicated short seller research houses, and they're out with a damning report on NIO, saying that they have set up a structure that reminds them very much of the one that Valiant. So Valiant is not a company that exists any longer because it has changed its name in the meantime to Bausch Health. But Valiant was this very fast growing pharmaceutical companies that used a lot of leverage to, it was basically an acquisition engine. And it was one of the best performing stocks on Wall Street. And then suddenly it collapsed, and they had this Philidor subsidiary or third party entity which they use to manage their revenue and profits, and Grizzly Research says that NIO is doing the same thing. So obviously there will be an intense focus on NIO today, but this is not the first time that they have been accused of accounting fraud.
That's an interesting one. Okay, and then on our earnings overview, we basically have the same chart of yesterday, General Mills. I don't know if we want to spend 2 days talking about General Mills, but what else is on your radar today?
Yeah, no, we're not going to talk more about General Mills. I think I'm actually looking forward to tomorrow because Walgreens Boots Alliance is a massive pharmaceutical or pharmacy chain in the US, and they also sell all the non-prescriptive drugs, etc., and, you know, shampoo, etc. It's actually a consumer health retail chain, so a very big footprint in the US. And then Micron Technology, which is one of the largest manufacturers in the world of memory computer chips. So very curious to get an update from them on what is the situation basically in the semiconductors industry.
Yeah, an interesting test on the retail front in general as well, because stores like Walgreens, et cetera, have a lot of small impulse buy type items sprinkled all over the store. So that will be an interesting report. Okay, we have a rather interesting calendar for today. It gets more interesting later in the week, and very interesting next week with all the usual first week of the month, jobs data, et cetera, from the U.S. But we have this central bank conference in Sintra, hosted by the ECB, Sintra Portugal, winding up today, and some very prominent speakers, to say the least, with Fed Chair Powell, Bank of England Governor Bailey, et cetera. Not sure this is necessarily the forum for announcing major new focus in policy, et cetera, but of course we need to watch this. The ECB is still struggling to roll out a credible message on this so-called anti-fragmentation tool, but spreads are orderly, so the market is getting credibility, at least from that angle. The German June CPI is out today, and interesting to see how that is shaping up as well after the 8%+ prints we've been seeing out of Germany, and various other bits and pieces, central bank speakers from the Fed. And then overnight, a New Zealand business survey, and then the Chinese official manufacturing, non-manufacturing PMIs, watching those ahead of the big round at the first of the month, especially that June ISM manufacturing, although we all know that it's the services side that's really important to focus on here in the US, and then any headline surprises on tomorrow's PCE inflation data point. All right, we've seen quite a development here in markets that we're risking quite a reversal formation on the weekly chart if we close even at this level, but especially if we close this week at even more negative levels. The daily setup is looking suddenly very ugly. So let's all stay on our toes out there. Be careful, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.